Welcome to episode 98 of the Thrash Report. This is your weekly music commentary podcast. We discuss all things metal and heavy music. My name is Chris, and joining me, my co-host this week, Jim Osborne. Jim, what's going on, buddy?
Oh, that intro, so brutal. That was, of course, from our guest, his band, Coffin Rites. Our guest today being Mr. Will Maravellis. How you doing, Will?
Doing well, guys. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, yeah. It's always a good time to come on a show and talk metal. So it's gonna feel like work tonight, I'm sure.
Right. Before we dive in, I mean, there's a lot of stuff we got to talk about. We're going to talk about the bands you're in. We're going to talk about 1459 Studios. We're going to talk about all sorts of cool things. But before we do that, we want to take out just a little bit to remember Cliff Burton.
All know Cliff Burton over here. Everyone, hi, Cliff. How you doing?
Dude, it's just his fingers just are nuts, and his freaking mop is just going. Yeah,
we were talking a couple of his fingers.
I know. We were talking before the show that's one of the things I really miss. It would have been great to see him live. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but let's go ahead and welcome our guest, Will. Will. Well, one of the questions we ask pretty much every guest. We're gonna start out with
every single one.
We start out with this question. How did you get into metal?
Oh, you know, I just woke up one day and decided that I was going to be a giant Carcass fan, and that was just kind of how it started.
You were just born with it.
Yeah, I had all that metal credibility and everything right out of the gate, and you know, and all that. The whole thing with music is I always go, everybody discovers that one band that gets them started, and that just kind of takes them through the evolution. It's one day I did wake up and find out I was a Carcass fan. I woke up and smelled a carcass, if you will. It started for me with Black Sabbath. You know, I was driving with my dad somewhere. My dad was a traveling sales guy growing up, so I was just happened to be with him one night. I don't remember how old I was, maybe like 10, 11 years old. I was a wee little lad. And I woke up in the middle of the night, somewhere in the middle of nowhere. And I hear this music coming out of the cassette player. And it's that very distinct Ozzy Osbourne voice. And I'm like, what is this? What is this that we're listening to? And my dad literally looks at me straight face and he goes, this is heavy metal, son. and I'll never forget that. I have no idea how old I was. I have no idea where I was, but
straight out of a meme.
Yeah, it was like one of those funny things of going, I really like this. This is cool. So it was Black Sabbath that really, really kind of got me into metal. As I think they got so many people in the metal because they, you know, created the damn thing. You know, and then obviously as I got interested in playing guitar from being a kid of the 90s with grunge and everything like that, it went from the Alice in Chains of the world and the Pearl Jams of the world to getting into Metallica's Megadeth, Pantera, into like, you know, Death and Morbid Angel, into like Carcass and all that kind of stuff. So it was just kind of a natural evolution of, I needed to be heavier. And then eventually my voice dropped and I got into death metal and it was great.
There we go. Yeah. So, and like, I remember, again, I was into the heavier stuff, but still, you know, like all Alice in Chains, you know, Facelift, I think is still a great, great album. So around that age, like how old were you when you started going through the grunge stuff and then finally getting to some heavier stuff?
Oh, you know, I started playing guitar when I was 10 years old. Wow. just like young. And my sister played before me. I remember she got a guitar for Christmas and I just thought it was the coolest thing ever. So I would like sneak away and like play her guitar and you know, and that kind of thing, and just kind of got interested in it. You know, like seeing Stevie Ray Vaughan on Austin City Limits, like really got me into like playing guitar and that kind of thing. But so I was pretty young when I got into it, but you know, definitely the, you know, Nirvana, that whole thing. It's like, oh, Nirvana was the big band, but, and I still really like them, but it was really Alice in Chains and Soundgarden from like the 90s stuff that really, really kind of hooked me and got me into that kind of stuff. So, but it was always heavy and it was dark and it was depressing and awesome, you know? So
have you pretty much stuck to metal the rest of the time, or you delve into other genres?
Well, the nice thing about growing up in La Crosse, where Jim and I are both from, it's growing up there was, I grew up in this club there called The Warehouse, and,
the great familiar.
Thing, oh yeah. It's just like, I grew up there and I would just go see whoever was playing, you know, whatever nights I could, Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, didn't matter. If I was available, that's where I go hang out. So I saw hip hop groups there. I saw, you know, a lot of punk music back then. I was still really huge into punk. You know, and then I remember seeing Oppressor and Nile there.
Oh,
and
wow. I'm going
like, what is this? This is amazing. That was definitely my first experience with death metal, was seeing Oppressor and going like, what is this? It's so cool. You know?
That's crazy being at the Warehouse too. And you could stand there for probably 5-6 hours looking at all the posters that Steven puts on the walls and just looking at all the people that have been through there. It is insane.
Yeah. And it's just, it's crazy to just go look back. And I mean, like any cool rock club, like, you know, like Reggie's is the same way. And, you know, in Chicago and, you know, if you've ever been to CBGB, which I've been lucky to be there when it was open, you know, it's pretty cool to just kind of walk around there, like any place, and go, oh, they played here. Like bands that are legendary now, you know, it's just crazy to think about, oh, there's Nine Inch Nails. Crazy, you know?
It was cool. I love, one of my favorite venues is the Rave or Eagles Ballroom in Milwaukee.
Yep.
And again, they have the posters everywhere. And that was actually something that helped sustain them through the pandemic. When everything was shut down, they were actually auctioning off autographed posters from all these shows. I mean, shows from years ago that they had that were autographed. It was pretty, pretty epic.
Yeah. It's, I spent a lot of time at the Rave too. It's, you know, I won't get into it too much, but as far as the, I kind of always laugh when people just go like, I don't want to drive like a half hour to see a show. And I'm like, you know, motherfucker, I used to drive to Milwaukee regularly to see shows, you know, it's like, it's a solid 4.5 hour drive, man. Put your big boy pants
that's
on.
That's right. As I say, next week, I'm driving from Minneapolis down to Milwaukee to see the Bass Strikes Back and then to Chicago to see Maiden and then back.
Nice.
You got to do what you got to do. Yeah. Got to do what you got to do.
Yep. And I'll be up in Trivium and 2 or 3 weeks up in the cities. And I was talking to my daughter about that. It's my daughter's first like big metal show coming up. And then she knows Chris and she knows our friend, John Krenz, and John Krenz looks a lot like Chris and I with the bald head. And my daughter said, I'm going to feel so left out. I'll be the only one with hair. I thought she's going to go a different direction. And then she just stabbed me.
Yeah. Yeah. Enjoy it before the murderous rage takes over. I'm a big Between the Buried and Me fan, and they're on that tour too, so hopefully I run into you at that show. It's like the tours ever since everything kind of opened back up, it's just everybody's on tour. It's almost mind-numbing to go like how many shows are happening right now. It's both the greatest and worst thing in the history of the world. You know?
Right.
So, but yeah, there you go.
Well, you did mention that growing up in La Crosse, you know, where Jim is from as well, as a Warehouse kid.
Currently lives. I'm not from here, but I've been here for the last 3 years.
There you go. Yes. Yep. You know, you mentioned that you've kind of seen all sorts of bands there. What else was it like? I mean, I know that, you know, Jim talks about it very fondly. What was it like growing up as a Warehouse kid?
You know, I got into plenty of trouble as a kid. Don't get me wrong, but I think in many ways that I mean this in all sincerity, is I think that it's there's got to be a place for the weird kids to go. And it's if you're not into sports, you're not into things that normal America views as things that kids should be doing, especially looking back on it as an adult now, where I sit here and go, I'm really happy that there was a place for the weird kids to go. Because I mean, I played hockey growing up, but the hockey is kind of an out there sport too in many ways. But as far as that went, I wasn't into football. I wasn't into basketball. It's like what I did during the summer is I went to play shows when I got older and go to shows. And I always loved that about the warehouse. And I love that about, I just gravitated towards music because I just didn't feel alone anymore, you know, and you just grow up as that, you know, that kid with whatever, you know, issues and things that we always say. One of my sayings has always been, nobody comes to metal on a winning streak.
That sense of community, right? You absolutely get that sense of community. Yeah.
Yeah. It was so huge and so vitally important to growing up. And, not just as a musician, like to be able to go and see people and hear people, all different kinds of music and hone your craft that you're so passionate about, but just being able to just have that experience around other people, the same people every week, you know, the same people every other week, you start to have that community, that camaraderie, those experiences together was super, super important. I was very lucky to be able to have a place like that growing up. And it shocks me that place is still open on so many levels. And I love that it's still open on so many levels. And
is that so many levels?
Oh, well, I mean, it should be.
The stairs. It's the never ending stairs, right?
Yeah. The best thing about the warehouse, right, is like when you sit there and you play and you're used to it and you're used to hauling gear up those stairs every other month or every other week, whatever it was, as a local band playing there, it's always the best when you see the band who's never played there before and they carry all their gear up that first flight of stairs and they're just so elated. They're like, we made it, guys, like high-fiving and the whole nine. And they're like, it's great. And they're like, where's the stage? And you go, another flight up, and they're like, just their spirits are crushed, you know. It's just like, it's one of the greatest things in the world. It truly is.
Love it.
I mean I learned a lot about life too. I learned a lot about business. Anybody who's ever spent any time with Steve, I would say that Steve definitely has rubbed off on me and in his own special way. He's made me, in my very dry sense of humor, has certainly came from there to some degree. I'm sure the fact that I'm kind of a stoic asshole kind of came from there to some degree. It was a really great experience. And I hope that any kid or anybody really of any age who's interested in music should go experience the place. It's a pretty cool living organism, I think.
Yeah. I've said on here before too, many times, that I wish growing up where I did, that we didn't have a place like that, you know?
Yeah.
So when I moved here and I heard it was like a metal place, I went up there and I ordered a beer and they said, we don't serve alcohol. Like,
yeah.
Oh, and that's my first experience with it. I didn't know anything about the place except there was heavy bands that play there. And then I just see all these young kids and it was pretty full that first time. And just, it's every time since then, it's just, like you said, you see a lot of the same people and total community. And I'm usually one of the older people there, but I feel like I'm just as young as everybody else there. So it's
awesome. Still really cool when I have gone back. I don't get back there as much as I would like to be completely frank, but when I do get back there and I see a show, it's still like, oh, hey, what's up, Rich? Or hey, what's up, Ben? It's like, it's a lot of the people that I grew up with, I haven't seen in like, you know, in some cases, 3-4 years, it's just like, hey, I just saw you yesterday. It's a really cool thing, you know? I do love the, you know, I'm definitely not opposed to anybody having a nice drink at a show or anything like that. So please don't take it that way. But I always say to people that, like, if you need a beer to have fun, the band sucks.
I gotta put that on a t-shirt. That's a good one.
Yeah, so I got lots of stupid little phrases like that, you know. It's Well, we've already hit two of them tonight, so I'm sure there'll be more.
It was cool. Last, was it the day after Christmas? I think is it Rig Time puts on the annual Christmas show, and your band Coffin Rites was there this year. And I was actually able to make it, so it was really cool seeing all the bands there, and then seeing yours, knowing that you're from La Crosse and that you're a warehouse kid. And then I forget if it was Steven or if it was someone that introduced you as a warehouse kid. And I'm like, that was cool.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Steve always likes to kind of follow like what's happening with the music world, and he goes like, oh, Will the Warehouse Kid opens a studio. It's like, Will the Warehouse Kid starts this band. Oh, Will the Warehouse Kid got a PRS endorsement, stuff like that, you know. It's just like, yeah, dude, I'll always be a Warehouse Kid. I'm fine with that moniker. It's totally fine, you know. I was whatever way you want to say it. It's still I'm just an overgrown, more hairy Warehouse Kid now.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, he mentioned opening a studio, so why don't you talk about that?
Oh, what a goof.
Give us some background on your 1459 Studios and kind of how that came to be, what you do. And
sure. Yeah, the 1459 Studios opened up roughly 14-ish years ago, somewhere in there. I don't remember the exact date anymore. It's been too many to keep track of. But I basically started recording, like many things. I started recording in La Crosse. I worked at a studio called Actual Sound Studios. I was an intern, grabbed coffee, you know, did errands, got food, ran the board when my when Mike didn't want to pay anybody else to run the board, whatever it may be. So I started recording as an intern at Actual Sound Studios in La Crosse. And when I graduated college, I just said, well, screw it. I just want to open up a studio. And, you know, I'm a 22-year-old kid at the time, and I'm just kind of going, well, let's just go find out. Let's see what happens. And I could do it. Sure. And I was just stupid and tenacious enough to just do it, I guess. And partnered up with the guy up here. I use that as my excuse to move to Minneapolis, where I live now. And basically, had a friend up here who had some studio equipment, and I had the, I guess I had the musician clout of being, a guy who had been in bands forever. And like, I was the face of the studio because I was out there playing shows with other people and that kind of thing. And, ended up working with him for a while at his studio called Bimanic Studios. After a couple of years of that, we went our separate ways, nothing bad. Just was kind of time to move forward. Hooked up with a good friend of mine up here, Zach Alterno, and we started 1459, and we moved into a building that had no idea what to do with us. And we were in there for several years, and we just made it work. We turned a rehearsal space into a recording studio, and eventually moved into another location. And a couple of years ago, ended up partnering up with a guy, buying a building, and owning an actual building with my recording studio in it and 20 plus rehearsal spaces for bands to be able to practice and rehearse and that kind of thing. In that time, I've done, I mean, tons of records. We could talk about that endlessly. And I wouldn't do justice at all to at least even a third of the bands I've worked with, because there's been so many great ones over the years. But, you know, done a lot of really great local regional stuff. Helped record vocals for Incinerate, who's a really super well-known Minneapolis death metal band who's been around for a while. Did some albums with Thor, who's a power metal icon. Yeah. Went and played some shows with him as a guitar player too. And you know, Reaping Asmodea made their last record here, which is fantastic. They're on Prosthetic Records. So it's kind of just turned into my own little money pit to record my own bands into an actual recording studio. And I've been really fortunate, but I've also worked my ass off to do it. So started making money about 3 years ago, really. I just put everything back into the business, more microphones, more preamps, more, you know, a nice mixing console that I got out of Pachyderm that recorded the Live Throwing Copper record, Nirvana's In Utero, one of Silverchair's records, some other stuff. I mean, Pachyderm was a legendary studio up here in the cities. They're still open, but they're struggling. They have been for many years, like many of those big iconic studios are. There's just not the $1 million budgets of recording anymore. That's just not the norm anymore. It's people are recording on their own or recording in what I refer to as working studios like mine. So yeah, 1459 has been around a long time, done a ton of records. And we'll say that will be the introduction and we'll go from there.
Awesome.
You said you had about 20 spaces for bands to practice in and stuff. Are they all yes. Rob Carlson bands?
That's a very fair question. Rob is in my building, but he is also in another building on the other side of town because there's not enough room to hold that much guitar and you know that many guitars and amps and cabs in one place. So you got to split them out.
he is an icon.
Yeah, he is Bobby Icon, in fact. So yeah, he's Rob's a good friend of mine. That's actually an excellent segue. So good job. You guys didn't plan that. Rob was Rob Carlson from Glutton for Punishment and Rip Snorter and Krog and God, how many other bands is he in? You know, Mastiff.
Black Flood Diesel.
He just joined those guys, right? So Rob was honestly one of the first people who really believed in 1459. That's why I'm saying it's an excellent segue because it's actually true. The first couple of years that I was there, he and Rob being in as many bands as he was, he just goes, "We're going to go record with Will. That's what we're doing." And because he was the boss of the band or whatever, he goes, "We're going to go record with Will. That's just what's going to happen." And nice. it was always that whole thing. We're going to go record with Will, and he just believed in what I was doing, and just kept bringing me work and you know, stuff with his label, with mastering jobs, that kind of thing. And I mean this in all sincerity, I joke a lot, but if it wasn't for Rob, those first couple of years would have been a lot more difficult. He was truly one of the first people who believed in what I was doing and one of the first people to really support it. And I'll always, always be thankful to Rob for that. And oddly enough, he was in the studio on Sunday with me recording more stuff with Rip Snorter. So it's pretty much been from the day the day the business opened to, you know, this weekend. He's been constant. And, you know, he loves music. He loves music almost as much as I do. Almost.
that's remarkable.
Yeah, because he works a lot more than I do because he'll put in like 65 hours a week. And I'm like, fuck that, man. I'll put in 20 hours at the studio plus my 40 at my regular job, but 60 hours at my regular job? Nope. Gonna go play guitar now. Peace out.
Yep. Yep. We tease him a bit. We have some fun with him and creating the icon name and everything, but he's an awesome dude and I've never heard a bad thing about him, and friends that I have in common with him say he's awesome. So
He's a big giant teddy bear, and I have no problem saying that out loud. The guy would give you a shirt off his back if he could. You know, he's one of those dudes where if I ever was in a lurch, I know he would be one of the first person to be like, "Yeah, man, what do you need?" He's just genuinely an awesome, awesome person, and he's an all right guitar player too. So that helps.
Yeah, well, if you ask him, he said he never tried to be great. So
yeah,
lucky him just accidentally doing it.
Yeah.
So, well, speaking of you know, you mentioned it kind of serves as your money pit to record your own music.
Yes.
let's actually talk about that. Let's talk about some of the projects you're in. We'll talk about Coffin Rites and Plague of Stars.
Sure.
How did those, you know, give us kind of the background story? How they come about, and you know,
sure,
go from there.
Sure. Yeah, I've got several different projects, I always say, and then I've got my two bands. You know, my projects are like Wolf Harvester, it's my ambient stuff. There's Insect Death, it's my one band grind band, and you know, Chalice of Suffering is a great studio project. Maybe we'll eventually play live. That's like funeral doom stuff, but I do that with some dudes all over the world. That's a lot of fun.
Wow.
My main bands are Coffin Rites, my death metal band, and then Plague of Stars, which is my gothic metal band. I really don't do justice with genres, so I always kind of say, listen to it and tell me what you think it is, but at its core, it is what it is. It's metal.
Yep.
And
I like that.
The Coffin Rites is was kind of the band I needed at the time, and still is. It's I was in a band up here for many years called We Are Legion, which was a I guess for lack of a better way to put it, kind of a semi-successful regional death metal band. We were, you know, very much a death metal band, Vital Remains-ish, you know, DSI, that kind of vibe. Al Town is still a great vocalist. He's a Mastiff and Glutton for Punishment, Apothic, a couple other great bands. And then the other members of that band play with me in other bands, which we'll get into. But yeah, We Are Legion kind of fell apart. Nothing bad. Again, I have nothing but respect and love for those guys. Just our lives all were just bonkers at that time. Our drummer was getting divorced. My singer, or my Al's mother had passed away at the same time that my mother got sick, at the same time that Paul's mother got sick. It just was the lovely thing of life all congealing at once. And unfortunately, that kind of just led to us just kind of all moving in different directions and finding what was going on, and eventually the band just called it. And as a result, I didn't want to stop playing music, but I also wanted to go a different direction. So I called up my buddy Eric Zydek, who I went to college with and spent many days at the warehouse with. He was a great guitar player, a great friend, and we started Coffin Rites together. Called our buddy Tom Tier, who's a punk rock drummer who was looking to play in a metal project. So we found that kinship of growing up as people who loved metal and loved punk rock and didn't really see much of a difference between the two, and just said, let's just play what we want to play, regardless of what the genre is called. Mm-hmm. My buddy Casey Harris, who was in Echoes of the Fallen and a ton of other great bands, he ended up joining as a bass player, and we found our singer Drew off of a Facebook ad, of all things. Wow. I knew him a little bit from the music scene, but didn't really know him super personally. I just saw his old bands play and just thought he was a great vocalist, and just kind of said, hey, what kind of music do you want to play? And just like heavy shit, you know, heavy shit. Hey, well, you like black metal? Yeah, cool. Hey, you like punk rock? Yeah. Hey, cool. You like hardcore? Cool. You know, let's just throw it all in a blender and see what happens. And just because all of us love death metal at the core, it certainly has all the blast beats and everything. So we definitely are happy to call ourselves death metal when people call us that, or thrash death, or blackened death, or this word, that word, spaces, hyphens, 14 other words, blackened death, core, grind, thrash, blah, you know, whatever. We're a metal band. But we play a lot of, we have a screamer, so I guess we'll just call ourselves death metal and leave it at that. So that's Coffin Rites. Plague of Stars was Plague of Stars, the gothic metal band, which, yeah, I can talk about that. We just confirmed a huge show. It's not announced yet by the venue, but I really don't care. Plague of Stars is opening up for Within Temptation on Tuesday for people who are into female fronted heavy metal. We're doing that show, which is going to be
cool.
Pretty huge for us to open the Skyway Theater on the main stage. You've never done that. Oh, nice. But Plague of Stars showed up to 1459 Studios with a couple of my friends many, many moons ago. This is probably about, it's close to 11 years ago now. And my friend Adam Sagan, who was from Winona, a good friend of mine, actually since passed away. He died from cancer a couple of years ago. But he approached me about starting a female front-end metal band with him, because he knew that I was very into that genre of music as well. So, like, you know, you're Within Temptations, your Night Wishes, your Leaves Eyes, your bands of that genre. So he approached me about playing guitar for it, because he goes, that could take a totally different spin on Will's love of really brutal death metal and putting that with this kind of music. And they just showed up at my studio and just with Melissa, our singer, said, hey, we're looking for a guitar player. Are you interested? And I'm kind of sitting here going like, I'm nonchalantly like, oh, no, you know, I'm like, I'm this metal guy and this, that, and the other thing. In my back of my head, I'm going, that's Melissa from Visions of Atlantis and Asia Madeva. And I'm sitting here going like, holy shit, this would be a big deal, you know, just because I was a fan of just a fan of her music previous to joining the band. And it was like, yeah, we're going to start this band. It's going to be cool. And me and Melissa struck up a kinship, and nobody else that came with to that visit ended up actually staying. But Melissa and I started that band, and it's kind of started out as, hey, we're just going to make a record. And it turned into a band and put together with our friends, went through a couple lineup changes, but the concept was Aaron Lodick, who was in We Are Legion with me, is the drummer. And Neil Pruitt is our bass player, who was the bass player for We Are Legion, is also our bass player. And then our buddy Frodo Caulfield has been in a crap ton of great local bands here, was our other guitar player. So there's the abridged version of the two band stories. So there you go.
That's awesome. We're I guess, you know, you mentioned live shows. I was to say, is there anything else new that you can share? Anything that you're currently working on? You got something that you want to share? Or...
Oh, as far as new music
coming?
New music is coming from both my bands. Okay. There's going to be something that you guys will, being a thrash metal show, we're going to, I will happily share that with you when it's done. But, the Coffin Rites guys and us, we don't really consider ourselves a quote unquote political band. But every so often we'll end up doing doing political songs covers, and people can figure out where our politics are if they like start to put the songs together and the things we've done, like, you know,
sure,
Creator, When the Sun Burns Black. And it's not a political statement, but apparently it is in 2022 to say Nazi punks fuck off. I'm like going, apparently that's a political statement. I'm just going, Nazi punks fuck off. Yeah, there
that's
you go.
Right.
You know, I hate you, go away. You know, we've done a Dead Kennedys classic, of course. We've got another, we've done Refuse Resist from Sepultura and things like that. But we seem to do one every 6 months to 8 months, just kind of for fun. And we took on a fairly ambitious one for our next one.
Nice.
It's a thrash metal classic, and it's a solid 9.5 minutes. There's the hint.
Okay. I'm excited. Yeah. It'll
Sounds
be good.
Awesome. Yeah. Looking forward to that.
Yep. So that'll be our next release. And then we go into album writing mode, and we're going to put out a new album in 2023. Plague of Stars is already recording a new album. We're 7-8 songs deep at the moment. And we've got 3 of them pretty close to done at this point. We're planning on putting out the new album, hopefully early 23. Coffin Great. Will probably be more like fall, but definitely new music either way. And there'll be a couple of things in between there to just keep everybody's whistles wet while we're trying to get albums done.
Awesome.
Did you say this thrash cover, is that coming from Coffin Rites?
It is.
Okay.
Yep.
I'll make sure that I have links to your Bandcamp pages, the Facebook pages. I'll have all that in the show notes. You want to just let people know where else they could get access to your stuff, or any social accounts that you're more active on?
Sure. Yeah. I think Bandcamp's the big one that we use for both bands. It's plagueofstars.bandcamp.com. Coffin Rites, R-I-T-E-S, as in, you know, witches and black magic and that kind of stuff. Yeah. Hey, like that.
There you go.
Nice. The Coffin Rites at bandcamp.com. You can find us both on Instagram and the, you know, the lovely old Facebooks and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, we're looking for labels for both of those releases, which we have had some interest in, which is good. Otherwise I would, FTWNU2 released Coffin Rites' last album, Human Erase, and they did an awesome job for us. I don't know if they're going to continue or not, but I know they've said that doing our next release, they feel like we need a bigger label, which is great for supportive reasons. So they have let us out of any obligation to allow us to look for a bigger label if we choose, which has been amazing and not typical of record labels. They were really fantastic for us on our last release, Human Erase. Other than that, yeah, it's just it's the normal channels. Just come come find us on social media, come say hi, come do a show. We're all over the place. Both the bands travel a lot and
right on.
Try and get on the road as much as we can.
Yeah. And I've said on here before that I'm not really into death metal, but because of people I've met in the Twin Cities scene and, you know, your band and Human Erase, like it's pulling me in, and yeah. Human Erase is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's death metal for thrash metal fans is a good way to say it. You know, it's,
there you go.
It's, you know, there's obviously a ton of thrash metal influence. Of course, it's like it grew up on all the classic stuff, and thrash metal is the biggest genre of metal. It's all the big four are all thrash bands, and mm-hmm. there's a reason why that genre is as big as it is. And you could go like, oh, it's Metallica. It's like, no, it's Metallica's part of it, but it's Megadeth, it's Slayer for sure. It's you know, it's obviously Anthrax, but let's talk about the greatest thrash metal band nobody ever talks about, and that's fucking Testament. You know, so the it's just like, dude, what superstars, man? It's just like everybody in that band is a damn superstar, you know, and they will never get the credit they deserve. And that's, then you've got this
yeah, I was just saying
Exodus, come on,
right? That's why I'm seeing The Bass Strikes Back twice.
Yeah. 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 It's, I mean, like, talk about you don't even have to be a thrash metal fan to be like, holy shit, what a tour. You know, I'm like Death Angel and just so many great bands on that. It's just, dude, just legendary. Like everybody in that, you know, Steve DiGiorgio got asked to join Megadeth and he turns it down, you know. I'm like, because he's like, nah, man, I got Testament. It's fine. You know?
Yeah.
It's a bummer about Gene, but come on, man. The Gathering with Dave Lombardo is like easily my favorite Testament record. So like a little kid going like, come on, man. Come on, Dave. record a new record. Make it really fast. Make it cool, you know? But I mean, I love Gene too. I just like, we were talking about Death before we started rolling, and obviously, you know, Strapping and Lad and Dark Angel and just all the stuff that Gene's done over the years.
The Atomic Clock.
Oh, dude, he's the king. It's, I remember meeting him. I was at Sounds of the Underground, and so I'm a cozy 5'10 on my best day, man. You put me in some shoes, I might be a little bit taller, but I'm 5'10 on my best day, right? And I walk up to Devin Townsend and Gene Hoagland just hanging out outside at Sounds of the Underground, and I'm like, hello, Mr. Hoagland, how are you? You know, the dude, he's a shit house, man.
He's just a giant. And yeah. Hear me, look, I'm a short dude. I'm like 5'5". So yeah. Imagine
yeah.
Just towers over me. Dude,
yeah.
Freaking Bobby Icon towers over me.
Like, oh, yeah. 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 Rob's a big boy. So
yeah. let's actually talk a little bit about, you know, you mentioned getting that PRS guitar endorsement. Sure. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure. So I was very fortunate in that I worked in the music industry for many years, doing lots of things, meeting a lot of people, you know, doing live sound, booking shows, you know, doing the recording thing, playing shows as a performer, having good connections with people who own venues and things like that. So I've been very fortunate to be able to meet lots of people in the industry over the years. It's like the tattoo industry, the music industry is really small. The longer you're in it, the more you realize like how small it actually is. And Paul Reed Smith about 4 years ago was starting this new program where they were trying to find what they referred to as real musicians, air quote, meaning like working musicians, people who just play for the sake of playing. You know, they're not they don't do it because they're collecting a paycheck. They do it because they love it. Mm-hmm. And that whole thing. So basically what happened is I was really lucky because I've been playing Paul Reed Smith guitars forever. I just love them. I grew up with them in Dave's Guitar Shop, another lacrosse reference. And I just went, I really like these things. And if I ever be able to afford one, I've made it. I've made it as a musician. I'll be able to afford one. And so when I was in my early 20s, I bought my first one and I've never played it. I've still to this day, since being 20 years old, I've never played a show without one of them. And I've never recorded a record without one of them, if not multiple. I've fallen in love with the brand. And one of my friends who worked at the company told me about this program, and he goes, hey, go talk to Dave's Guitar Shop and kind of get into the know-how and see if they're interested in having you be what's called their pulse artist. It's kind of like that store's Paul Reed Smith representative, if you will. Okay. And because he said to me that when I thought of Paul Reed Smith, the first person that came to mind was me. And I was going like, well, that's pretty amazing considering, you know, Michael Akerfeld or, you know, Marty Friedman or, you know, like actual musicians, you know, people that have played those things, Paul Allender or, you know, Mark Tremonti or whoever. Right. But he just goes, no, it's like, I can't imagine like watching you on stage without a Paul Reed Smith. So he just thought of me immediately. And I thought I was really touched that he thought of me when he told me about the program. I went and talked to Dave Rogers and Raina Thielen, who work at Dave's Guitar Shop, about the program. They're like, oh yeah, we were just going to ask you anyway, because, you know, I was just like, you're like that guy for our store. So I kind of started with that program with the Pulse Artist program. And I've been kind of growing with the brand ever since, and doing more rep work for them, doing some video work for them. So I'll be doing some like YouTube reviews of their gear. And sweet. I just got an MT-15 amp that I'm going to demo for them here, that I'll get the video done for that and share that with people. So people can find me on YouTube too for $14.59. If you want to see Paul Reed Smith play A tuning, B tuning death metal, it's a thing and it's awesome.
Nice. That's awesome.
But so you can do the YouTube thing too, if you're into that. But yeah, it's just, I kind of just fell into it by just being a representative for the brand without realizing I was a representative for the brand. And people just go, must be nice to be able to afford those guitars. And I'm just kind of going, man, I really wish I didn't love them so much. I really wish I fell in love with the brand that everything costs like $500. That would be pleasant.
Yep. You mentioned Dave's Guitar Shop, and I go there. The only thing I buy are picks.
Yeah. I love that place. Just love that place. It's every couple of months I just go, I'm just going to go to Dave's this weekend, and I just drive home, and I usually come home with something. It's a problem.
I don't know if we talked about on this show, but they just had their 40th anniversary. Yep. July or August, end of July, maybe.
Yeah. It's end of July. Yep. Yeah, I was at that as well. Yep.
Yep. You went in the morning. I missed you. I was there in the afternoon, but yeah. I did not know that Paul Reed Smith himself was going to be there. I knew they had some reps from different companies coming, but walking in and,
oh wow,
hearing he was there and then seeing him give a toast to Dave Rogers. I mean, that was really cool.
Yeah. I think Dave was one of the, I think Dave was honestly one of the first stores that really kind of gave it a chance. Cause when people think about Paul Reed Smith and they think about that as a brand, a lot of people don't realize that he didn't really become a major player until like the mid late 90s. You know, he started building guitars in the, you know, mid 80s and that kind of thing. And, you know, started having his really collectible, you know, years were like 88 and 89, where Gibson and Fender is like 59 and 60. Right. So it tells you how much newer this company is in that world. And I don't think they're number three officially in sales, but I think they're revered in the same way that like Gibson and Fender are, because I'm pretty sure like Ibanez or ESP has got to be like doing more sales than Paul Reed Smith. But as far as dollar to dollar, number of units, whatever business speak you want to use, but they're an iconic brand, and people don't really realize how new they actually are in many ways. So yeah, the 80s was many years ago now, I realize, but still, it's like Gibson's been around since 1890. So sure. Perspective, you yeah. know. So yeah. You know, and Leo Fender was, when did he start building guitars? The 50s? Yeah. So anyway, there you go. Yeah, guitar history with Will. Yay.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Played a PRS, but you know, I've seen them in the store and looked at them. They're really cool looking, and I don't know. I'm sure I'll pick one up someday.
Well, the next time I see you at a show, just ask and I will go here.
Oh, dude, that's awesome.
I'll go up on stage and play your stuff and you can stand out and watch. Sure.
Yeah, I've always wanted to know how awesome my band could be, so just make it happen.
All right, that'll be your band's last show.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of guitars, Jim, I saw you posted and you tagged Joey Belladonna. Do you have another new guitar?
No, that's the one I got last January, February.
Wait a minute. So how many do you have now?
I have 3 electric.
Okay. I just didn't remember it being purple.
No, I had the black ESP that I got last year.
I thought you got a yellow one. I thought you had a yellow one.
Nope.
Okay. Must be in the other co-host.
Could be, yeah.
All right. But,
you got some catching up to do. I always say it's like, I always feel a lot better about my ridiculous guitar collection when I go over to Rob's house and it's just like, Rob's got to be in the 100 plus at this point. I thought 20 to 25 was ridiculous. And it's just like, nope. I still got a long ways to go.
Wow. Well, and for those people watching the video, why don't you lean over to the side a little bit there, Will, and show people what you got hanging there.
Look at that. There's a beautiful, beautiful wall of many guitars.
I love it.
My wife is quite handy, and I was gone for a trip. The band was playing a weekend somewhere, and I was gone from like Thursday to late Sunday afternoon, and I came home to my office in our house here being completely torn apart because my wife decided to do something very nice for me and build me a guitar wall. So that I could hang up all my guitars and everything in my office here versus just having, because I literally have like a pile of cases and I just go like, oh, where's this one? And I have to put like pieces of tape on them to go, I want to play this one and, you know, and that kind of thing. So now that I can have them all out and that kind of thing. And it's, cool. Mostly Paul Reed Smiths on that wall. I've got a couple nice Gibsons too. So, you know,
that's awesome.
It's good guitars are good guitars. You know, I don't discriminate when it comes to good quality shit, you know.
Awesome. Well, before we start wrapping up, again, this has been an amazing conversation. This is so fun. I think before we wrap up, you know, I'd like to know, what are you listening to now? Like, is there something new that you're really into? Or maybe there's a band that you feel as though just as, you know, isn't getting the respect they deserve.
Oh, man, I should have prepared for that question because I could probably give it a lot more justice if I actually would have prepared. Man, there's so much out there, and there's just so much good stuff in metal music in general, especially for someone who loves power metal and thrash metal and death metal and gothic metal. And it's just like, I just love metal, you know, and I like punk rock and I like rock and roll too. So I'm kind of all over the place musically. I say, if it's got a guitar, I'm into it. Or if it's hip hop with Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg from like, you know, pre-2000, I'm into it. You know, it's, any of that kind of stuff. But as far as like, there's just so much garbage to wade through with metal but there's so much good stuff out there because there's so many great underground labels just still supporting bands and metal fans still buy music. It's like, here's the lovely office conversation of, hey, there's just a portion of the CD collection, you know. I absolutely love physical media. Nothing against people who download, but for the love of God, don't download for free. Don't be a douchebag. Buy the record, buy it digitally, buy a t-shirt at the show, do something. And I don't mean, man, just because I'm in a band. I mean that in general. It's because these are bands. Yep. This is how bands survive. Nobody makes money off of record sales anymore.
Yeah. And then I think Jim and I, we've often talked about, you know, support your artists, you know, buy merch.
Yep. You know, it's consume music in the way that you choose. If that's Apple Music or whatever, fine, but buy a t-shirt at the show if that's the case or whatever it may be. But as far as God, I mean, it's like there's the old mainstays of going like, man, I'm just looking at my pile of stuff and going, you know, what have I gotten recently? Phobophilic's really cool. They're a band from Fargo. Not a super well-known band. They just put out their debut album on Prosthetic Records.
I saw that.
Yeah, it's grimy, dirty, awesome stuff. That's really fantastic. They're kind of an up and coming underground band. Reaping Asmodea is another band that yeah. really comes to mind. I'm really a big fan of them. They're just techie. They're just techie enough to be interesting, you know, but they're still very musical. They're from Minneapolis. So I'm not just saying that to be like, oh, it's my buddies. They're very good. They put most of the bands that I know to shame as far as tightness. It's absolutely ridiculous. Oh man, I really should have prepared, guys. I should have done
that. All right, man.
But
it's all good. No pressure, man. It's all good.
But Bloodbath.
New Bloodbath is fucking awesome.
It's so good. It's just like that band was I remember, actually, I was talking to my friend Brian, who I used to be in Cold Colors with many moons ago. And I remember I was talking to him about Opeth, who I'm a giant Opeth fan. And I'm a giant fan of old Peth and new Peth. you know, I love Opeth. I remember talking to Brian, and I just said, man, just someday I just want to hear like a straight up death metal band with just Michael Akerfeld just doing just death metal like all the time. That'd be so awesome. And he goes, yeah, it's this band called Bloodbath. They're awesome. And I'm like, never had heard of this is years ago, right? I've never heard of him at the time. And he goes, like, yeah, he was in the band for a little while. Now Peter Tarkin's in the band. And I'm like, from Hypocrisy? And he's like, yes. And I'm like, oh, I gotta go check this out. So I immediately like became a gigantic Bloodbath fan. And
they're kind of a super group, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. They Michael Akerfeld rejoined the band. Dan Swanna was in the band for a while. A couple dudes from Catatonia were in the band, are in the band rather. Martin Axenrot, who was in Witchery, was the drummer. He was in Opeth for a long time too, but he's been in a ton of other great bands of the genre as well. Michael quit, and then they got Nick Holmes, who's one of my favorite vocalists from good old Paradise Lost, joined their band. And I'm like, oh, Nick hasn't done death growls in a while, and just killed it, just kills it in their band. And he's done three albums with them now, and now Paradise Lost is doing death growls again, and I'm like, yes. Paradise Lost is a really great band if you ever want to get lost in someone's discography, because you can start with their first album and like go through their early stuff and go, oh, it's like grungy death metal and that kind of thing. And then they have this period in the middle where they're doing like dancey, like Depeche Mode type electronic music, and it's still great. And you're going like, this doesn't make any sense, but it's still great. And then they just started doing melodic metal where they weren't doing any death growls, and that's still great. And you're just sitting here going like, what the hell? This band can do anything they want, and it's just awesome, you know? And then they put out The Plague Within, and they're just, I'm just going like everything all in one pile, and it's awesome. And
if only Will had passion, you think? Yeah, if only Will was excited about this.
I love music. Sorry.
It's great.
We don't have enough time in a day to talk about all.
It's awesome. Which by the way, that this is a great, great time that we need to actually start rolling this up.
Yeah. Sorry. Shut up. No, got it.
It's awesome.
No, it's great, man.
Yeah, this has been super fun. Before we kind of wrap up, Jim, any other questions? Anything that you have for Will?
I don't know. I'd probably just open up another box of
highly likely.
You know what? That's just great. We'll have Will on again. It's all good, man.
I'd love to.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Next time I'll prepare for that question. I'll go like, okay, who should I be? I should be like, okay, cool. Here's a list of 10 bands. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, go. Yeah. Yep.
No, I guess I'd just say that it's cool getting to know you and seeing all the other friends that I'm see on Facebook talking about 1459 and working with you and seeing your band live. And I'll see Plague of Stars one of these days. And everybody out there listening, just go check out his studio and your bands.
It's awfully kind of you guys. Thank you.
Specifically, awesome. The first 2 minutes of Buried in Blood. Unbelievable.
Eric Zydek, our now former guitarist, unfortunately moved to California, but Taylor Hageson took over for him about 2.5 years ago, and Taylor's awesome, but Eric's opus, man, that riff has been around for a long time, and we're like, we have got to turn this into a song. And
that riff, yeah. I mean the riff on its own is amazing, but then the drums kick in too. It's just beats your face.
I love that. I love that song. It's literally like to the point where I'm going like, man, I'm kind of sick of playing the song, and I'm kind of not sick of playing the song. Just because it's so fun to play, but we play it at so many shows. It's awesome. Good songs are good songs, you know, and people seem to like that one.
Yeah.
That's great. Good. Well, I want to thank you so much for your time today, man. Thanks for hanging out with us. And dude, just it's awesome talking metal with you. And I want to thank everyone for listening as well. Make sure that you go follow us, hit us up on our socials. You can always hit our socials at thrashreport.com. You'll get archives of all the past episodes with show notes at thrashreport.com. You can always send us an email at thrashreport@gmail.com. We really appreciate everyone's support. Go leave a review on Apple Podcasts. We really, really appreciate that. And we'll catch you next time on the Thrash Report. See ya.